Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 15th of September, a very chilly Monday, and you can tell we all look like we're in uniform. We all are wearing the exact same thing. That's we look good. We all have our WAMC sweatshirts on and we're ready for it keeps the content fresh, yes. So here we go. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning, Joseph.
Political consultant Libby Post is here.
Good morning.
And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, as always, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us, and it's very nice to have you all here. We welcome your comments, as always, at WAMC.org. It's roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we would love to have your thoughts on the myriad of topics that we will discuss this morning. We have a lot to get to, so let us begin. We'll start talking about, ISIS. Okay. U.S. intelligence agencies remain uncertain about danger posed by Islamic State. Hours before President Obama announced a new U.S. military offensive against the Islamic State, one of his top counterterrorism officials testified to Congress that the al-Qaeda offshoot had an estimated 10,000 fighters. The next day, a new assessment arrived from the CIA. The terrorist organization's ranks had more than doubled in recent months, surging to somewhere between 20 and 31,000 fighters across Iraq and Syria. The enormous discrepancy reflects in part significant uncertainty among U.S. intelligence agencies over the dimensions of and danger posed by America's latest Islamist adversary. Does it really matter when we're getting into the numbers, I guess, is the first question.
Yes. I mean, if they got more, they're going to hurt you more.
Right. I mean, it's the rhetoric around it that matters.
And I also think, but don't we get into a semantic issues? I mean, we had Malcolm Nance on Friday, and one of the things he was saying is, okay, well, is it, you know, are these al-Qaeda members who are also considered to be a part of this group? Is it that group? We're not identifying themselves this way, but we're identifying themselves that way. And it seems to be that's what we're talking about, of more of a definition.
Because this article made it seem like they are really two distinct groups with different kinds of strategies, which flies in the face of what Malcolm said on Friday, but I think it's just the continuum.
Well, not really. I don't think it does fly in the face of what he said. Because, look, his whole position is that the ISIL or ISIS or whatever is not really Muslim, and that there are others out there who know that their Muslim credentials are lacking. People, these kids, if you've been following the headlines, these kids from all over the world are running over there for what they believe is. So it's possible you could change everybody's mind, but I think it's kind of doubtful myself.
It would be really nice to have actual intelligence so that we could make decisions that were the best for the United States. But yeah, there's been confusion since ISIL emerged about how strong or how dangerous they were, including all the area that they seem to have taken, which is actually not, it's all Sunni territory. So it isn't like they had to like overcome a whole lot to take over that
much. Yeah, but that's assuming that all Sunnis are alike.
Well, that's true. But I mean, they're definitely fighting against Shias and Kurds. So you know that they have not moved into any of those areas. They've just taken over. And they're cool right now. Mark Thompson, who is a wonderful military and foreign affairs reporter for Time magazine, writes that this is not unlike Al-Qaeda, where we did not really recognize for a long, long time the danger. And even their tactics are the same. They used airliners to attack us when we did not think that was possible. And ISIS is doing the same with beheadings. They've gotten a lot of attention and fury because of this really kind of low-tech and disgusting method. And that what Americans need to do, what the allies need to do, is also think out of the box and combating them.
And your thinking out of the box is?
Well, I think, again, if we're going to go back to Malcolm Nance, that this is going to be Muslims who are going to really make the difference here to say, no, this is not what we want. This is not Muslim. This is not our beliefs. And you have to get out of here. We don't want to behead people.
Which is fascinating, because you see the headline in the New York Times yesterday, the day before, that the Arab countries had agreed to do the airstrikes.
Right.
Well, you know, there's one degree of separation between who gives you the planes and the bombs and, you know, and who drops them.
Well, I think part of, I mean, the thing about these young kids, you know, going over, because this is, quote unquote, the cool thing to do, which is a little scary, you know, it goes back to LBJ's, you know, you need to win their hearts and then you'll win their minds. And and so there needs to be something, some other cool thing coming out saying, you know, some person, some leader, some icon, you know, within the Islamic world, you know, saying this isn't the right way to be, to do. This isn't what Islam is all about. You know, what I said before about it flies in the face of what Malcolm had said, because he made the comment that ISIS is Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is ISIS. It's all one group. They're just redefining themselves. And I, and you know, I don't know enough about all of this, but it just seems as that we're in the article in the post, they're seeing them as two distinct different groups, and I just think it's all in a continuum. Al-Qaeda has lost its juice. It's reinventing themselves into something else, and they will continue to reinvent themselves into something else.
And the threat to us is the same. Ultimately.
Right, the threat to us is the same. I don't think anybody can say.
Well, that's why I asked about the numbers. I mean, we're still talking about terrorism that is facing us.
Look, it was what? How many? 40 people or 38, 28, whatever it was, who downed the planes? Big deal. It's 10,000, 30,000.
I think you're close.
Oh, am I? Thank you.
I think you're close to it. I think the issue is who the leadership is in each of these things. Everybody may have the same anti-U.S. rhetoric and the rest of it, and maybe even the same purposes. But for the full employment for these people who are running these various organizations, they're the real competitors. So it isn't as if Al-Qaeda has said, okay, now we're ISIL. It's that a different group of, you know, of people who want to get ahead are running those particular organizations.
What's interesting is yesterday there was a report on the news that, you know, it's more than $1 million a week that they're making on the oil and the other kinds of weird things that they're making money on.
Yeah. Al-Baghdadi, who is the leader, the so-called leader of ISIS, grew up, came to power under the American occupation, and he is quite astute. I mean, that's one of the powers of ISIS, is the leadership and the strategy that they've been pursuing, including selling oil and use of American weapons left behind in Iraq. A horrible policy. I really wish we would look at our arms industry. We're the ones empowering so many of these groups. This happened in Afghanistan as well.
So one of the other questions, of course, that came up over the weekend is, would the beheading of the British journalist bring Britain in and galvanize that country much like it has here?
The U.S.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think it could. I think Britain's kind of busy with other things this week.
Yes.
Which they'll have a country. But I think that's clearly part of ISIS's strategy. And I understand they also are some women hostages. We may be seeing women being beheaded. Think about that.
Yeah.
All right. We have a couple letters. Go ahead.
Okay.
On.
Tom says, what about the legal beheadings in Saudi Arabia for minor infractions? What's the difference? I'll never forget. When the princess married the commoner, or was it the other way around, and they chopped both of their heads off. Yeah. It was unbelievable. Yeah. We had one that said, you mentioned it one day, says Ellen, but we haven't heard any discussion yet on Scotland. Would love to know your thoughts. And Bobby C. says, why is the media acting like ISIS is a new adversary, different from Al-Qaeda, pretty much along the lines that we've been discussing? Mm-hmm. Just last week, Ellen interviewed Malcolm Nance. I did it, who explained that we've been fighting ISIS, Al-Qaeda for years. And that is what I got.
All right. And again, we'll be talking about Scotland. We've all read up on the subject, and we'll tackle that in a few minutes later on in the show. Let's take a break. Actually, we'll come back and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments on everything. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Hudson River Valley Greenway and National Heritage Area, sponsoring the 15th annual Hudson River Valley Ramble, featuring more than 200 events throughout the Hudson Valley. Weekends in September, HudsonRiverValleyRamble.com. Unusual wedding rings and more in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, featuring a variety of jewelry specializing in repair, remodeling, and recycling. 413-236-9300. And Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975. CapitalCitiesBMW.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We were just talking about, ISIL. We were also, we had one letter writer asking about Scotland, and as I said, we were going to talk about it, so we started talking about it during the break, so we might as well just talk
just
about
jump
it now.
Into
yeah,
it.
Jump right into it while you're all ready to go. With opinion polls on Thursday, Scottish independents vote too close to call. Prime Minister David Cameron of Britain faces the risk this week of becoming the leader who presided over the breakup of the United Kingdom, and that is only one of his immediate problems, getting to what Rosemary was alluding to a moment ago. After the release, of course, of the video showing the beheading by Islamic radicals of a British hostage. So the combination of issues obviously puts a tremendous pressure on Mr. Cameron. A few days left before the Scottish vote, Mr. Cameron is expected to fly to Aberdeen on today to implore the Scots to stay in the United Kingdom, threatening them with a weaker economic future if they go it alone, and emphasizing that a vote for independence is forever, according to officials briefed on his text.
I just point out one piece of interesting information, and that is that the Queen was there, and denying all the while, don't you know, that she has any politics at all, because she's not allowed to have politics.
She actually said, I think people should think very carefully about this, and there was an uproar, because that was supposed to be the expression of opinion.
It was an expression of opinion. That's exactly
it was sort of a veiled threat.
Well, no.
I thought it was pretty veiled.
It was veiled. I mean, would she want them to leave?
No.
Right. So people need to think, you know, connect the dots.
As many subjects as you can have.
That's
she,
right.
And she would still be the subject. She would be kept as the Queen of Scots if this happened. I would like to say that I think referendums are far superior to war as a method of deciding whether you're going to stay with a country or not, including our own civil war. But that this is a disturbing trend that we're seeing countries kind of shatter, countries that were put together. It used to be in the last century that you wanted to join forces. Italy unified and Yugoslavia came together to become stronger economically and politically. And now we're seeing this splintering. And Scotland, if it goes, I think you're going to see Northern Ireland wanting the same. You're going to see at least two districts of Spain also calling for separatism. Sure. It's happening definitely in Bosnia. You're seeing that splinter. Iraq. We've already seen it in Czechoslovaka. It's now two different countries.
We saw it in the United States during a certain
Texas could be next.
Well, that would be okay.
Referendum in Texas.
What? Right. Texas, California, Vermont, and the Adirondacks. Yeah, all trying to secede from the Union.
Texas would be, that would be right. I mean, I read another piece. There was an op-ed by someone from Canada talking about when Quebec wanted to do this.
That's right.
And he said, you know, just think really hard and long before you make this, because it might not be everything you think it's going to be in the long run. And, you know, it's better to stay together.
I also think we're hearing a whole lot of rhetoric. Like, really, it's forever if Scotland votes to get out, and then 5 years from now wants to come back, and England say, no, we don't want you. I think that's kind of baloney, too. Some of the concerns about currency are very interesting.
Well, would they stay with the pound? Would they go with the European Union, the Euro, blah, blah, blah.
The Sunday Herald in Scotland, which backs independence, filled its front page with photographs of yes voters under the headline, "Now is the time, you are the generation."
Well, let me put it this way. I'm going to make a prediction. Everybody write it down, and if I'm wrong, you can scream at me. They're going to vote yes.
They're going to vote yes.
They're
going to
vote yes. You see, well, yeah, you see all these people out in the street with yes signs and everything else, and you don't see many no signs. I think
the polling's been very tight.
Yeah, well.
I think the yes campaign has certainly been more active and colorful. They even have a dress designer who had all her models come out with the yes buttons
Vivian
on them.
Westwood.
Yes, exactly. Change is hard, and if I had to pick it, I would say they would stay. But Scotland's still ahead. This whole effort was scary enough that end up with more autonomy either way.
So let's see if I get this right. I said no, and I said it's going to happen, and you said no, it's not
going to
happen.
I'm going to step out.
The deciding vote would be Libby then.
I don't think it's going to happen either.
2-1, Joseph.
I do not think it will happen either.
And I use
this gives gives me a huge opportunity.
I know.
Right. Yes.
I know.
Incredible. He's going to be
only good.
I'm taking Friday off.
Well, I'm not here on Friday either, but you know, because I'm in Ithaca,
okay,
so you can't.
All right.
You know, every time a village in the state of New York has the opportunity to decommission itself, they always vote no.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Changes
almost every single time.
No, I mean, you had that situation in New Paltz. Now, I don't remember exactly what happened, but there was a combining of the police forces.
Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about if the village of Anans decided to dissolve and just, you know, its pieces would end up just being part of the town of Coligny, we always vote no, you know.
Sure.
And so I don't know if people would want to just totally strip themselves away from
I want to know if Mel Gibson has been campaigning in Scotland.
Please. Well, probably not the strongest.
Libby, I think you had that wrong.
Okay,
it wasn't as if they were going to disband.
I know, but still, it's this whole thing of change is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
Is this notion of, well, we're...
And stability, right?
Right, we feel pretty safe the way we are.
It's worked for 300 years,
more or less.
We got to take a break.
We shouldn't play the Ballad of Rob McDunn. You remember that one, Johnny Cash?
Mm-hmm. Here we go. We'll listen to that after the news, maybe. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is here. Libby Post is here. Alan Chartok is here. And we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. Mm-hmm. roundtable@wamc.org. Not surprisingly, we have many letters on our discussion on Scotland, and Alan will read them right now.
Here are two of them. Good morning, good people. Is anyone on the panel taking up into consideration that Scotland will get to keep 90% of their oil revenues if they split from the UK? Currently, these revenues are being used to plug the holes in the UK budget gaps. Somebody better watch those ballot boxes. Diebold?
Yeah.
Yes.
Diebold.
Yeah. That's
they might not be counting right.
Yeah. And anyone, as always, thanks for the show. Pete from Tolland. And Nick says, morning, what would happen to the Union Jack as the flag? What about the British Armed Forces, Coast Guard, Border, Customs, let alone all the overlapping financial tax, etc.? Has any of this been sorted? And then Tom, I'm going to let a second letter come through. Scotland leaving is like California, Texas seceding from the U.S. as much as we'd like to see Rick Perry on the other side of the border.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not California, but Texas.
Right. stop. we welcome your letters as always. roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. And we move on now to other issues. And I don't know. How many did you read?
Three. Did you have another one?
I have like five.
Really? Well, no.
All right. Well, we'll go over that in a minute.
Okay.
I'll try to figure out which ones. Okay. Anyway, let us go to...
I used to work for a boss, a politician. You know, you tell him something, you go, okay.
No problem. Whatever you say.
It was a tonal thing. Okay.
Okay.
We go on to another topic, and we talk about the Pope. Pope Francis married 20 couples on Sunday. You ask, why are we talking about this? Well, some of whom had already lived together and had children, in the latest sign that the pontiff wants the Catholic Church to be more open and inclusive. In the first wedding he has performed in his 18-month papacy, Francis took each couple through their vows in turn, including Gabriella and Guido, who already had children and thought such a marriage would be impossible People getting married on Sunday are couples like many others, the Diocese of Rome said in a statement. Some already live together, some already have children. The ceremony was the first of its kind in the Vatican since Pope John Paul II presided over a wedding in 2000 when he was the leader of the world's 1.3 billion Catholics.
Cool.
pretty interesting, isn't it?
I don't know why I care, but I do like this Pope. I think he's just doing kind of human things. He's being forgiven and human. And you have to love the Catholic Church, which anytime it does anything that's more modern than maybe the 16th century, they look like, wow, how progressive and wonderful.
Well, I mean, I think that's the problem. You come at him and you go, oh my God, this is so great. It's a shame they didn't do this 1,000 years ago. Yeah.
Well, their doctrine is slowly catching up with their demographics.
Well, but it's a fascinating subject.
And correct me if I'm wrong, from where I'm sitting on this side of the table, isn't it true that Catholic priests have been ordained who already had families?
Well, they got divorced.
Yeah, if you got divorced or widowed.
Not divorced.
Oh, they couldn't get divorced.
If they died.
Or
if the wife
well,
died.
Annulled is an interesting word because, as you know, annulments have been granted
absurd.
Under strange circumstances.
No, it's like indulgences. You pay enough, you can get anything.
And that came out of the pre-shortage where they said, you know, and I think they even had a thing. It was saying, you know, we need a few good men. We're looking for priests, not saints.
Right.
Yeah, let us know that the Catholic Church has not taken real steps that would end the priest shortage, which would be women.
Right, let him get married.
Right. Let this whole celibacy craziness, which...
Right, and then JK would cut down on some of the abuse that's gone
exactly.
on.
Exactly, exactly.
Our friend Don says petrodollars have been funding militant Islamic groups and continue to do so. When we invaded Iraq, we created created the climate for ISIL. Perhaps it is better to have a dictator in office in these countries. And Jack says, while I'm as repulsed as much by the public political beheadings, I don't see the big difference between that and any other form of dominant powers executing any human being. Do you understand that beheadings is the preferred method used in Saudi Arabia and a couple of other Gulf states? This is not abnormal in that part of the world. I can't get that.
That's the thing.
Yeah, there are lots of beheadings and cutting off of body parts, but they're doing it because it plays really strong in the West where it is not normal.
And among followers that like what they're doing over there.
It's horrible.
Made for, I mean, I have not watched the videos. I'm just not going to do that. But they are not big seats, you know, where, like in the movies.
It's horrible.
They're small knives.
Yeah,
and
it's
made for maximum pain and torture.
Hmm.
Did you watch? Who watched the? Did anybody look at the tape?
I have looked at everything.
I have not,
find, Jess,
and I'm not going to.
Yeah, either have I. I look at all this stuff just because I want to know about it.
But my question is, why they read the statements? I mean, are you hoping for, I don't know, a fast death,
a last minute
reprieve? But you know, I think that I would just like. Say, no, I'm not reading your stupid thing and throw myself down face. And, that, you know, I'm not blaming the victim. Let me make that perfectly clear. I'm not blaming the victims. It's just a horrible way to die.
That's
and
horrible.
It does make me wonder what their last moments are like. I really admire these journalists and aid workers who are taking such risk, just like the Ebola doctors. We have a lot of real heroes in this world right now.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new letter in about Scotland, and then we'll take a break.
Okay. Jeannie says, I'll tell you what she says. Scotland is not like California. It was conquered. All the seceding around the world may not be a bad thing. The huge nation state is just a construct. In 1919, all kinds of arbitrary borders were drawn. Iraq was created, for example. Maybe this is just a return to more natural nation forms. Maybe smaller is better, and that's Jeannie. You know, I once went to a lecture by a distinguished anthroposophist who talked about the conditions that the world would survive. And this is many years ago, and he said, if all the nation states are not eliminated by in 10 years and people who are nodding their heads much like this, if the nation states are not eliminated, the world is basically doomed. To which I turned around to the neighbor, to the lady next to me, and I said, well, Well, I guess I couldn't say it on the radio. But the guy should say that
California was not. I can't remember exactly what she said, but yes, it was American imperialism that created California
or Texas,
right?
Because we
got rid of all the indigenous people, so it was some nation building there.
I wonder if there's any relationship between Putin and what he's doing now and what we were doing in them days in California. Yeah,
absolutely.
Texas.
This is there is a trend in the world going back to tribes, to our most like unit, and that was supposed to end with nation building, that people would learn to work together. So I don't really see this splintering thing as good.
You're still going back to defense of your position on Scotland?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All
yes.
Right. Fair enough.
Although I am afraid about Friday.
Wait a second. You took a very good, honest position.
But it's close. It's really, really close. So you could win this. And that would be horrible.
Really, what she's afraid of, she doesn't want to have to deal with the gloat on Monday morning.
All right. Cue the music. We'll be back in a minute.
And McDonald's, it was in their blood to fight. With each passing generation, it became a man's birthright. But they always had one common enemy. Never would the English crown take Scottish independence.
Support comes from Flynn Audi, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, providing sales, leasing, and servicing of Audis in the Berkshires and surrounding areas. FlynnAudi.com. High Meadow School, Stone Ridge, New York. Now enrolling Music and Me, ages 3 and under, and Community Story Hour, working to nurture early learners. HighMeadowSchool.org. And the ADK Cafe, a delicious kitchen in Keene, New York, serving home-cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. TheADKCafe.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We have a couple other issues. We'll have a lightning round in just a moment. But before we get to that, we want to bring you up to date on our lockbox challenge. Alan, set it up.
Yes, we have a $25,000 challenge in order to take our really old control room and make it into a livable place. You know, not every bell and whistle that ever was, but to make it good. And the Lennox Foundation said $25,000 if we can get another $200,000. And here to give us the information is the great Megan.
And can I just ask a question before it goes? You do that? So just so I'm correct, and all of that money then goes to the $1 million in the fund drive.
Oh, absolutely.
It all counts.
That's why we collect money for the fund drive, which is to do these things.
Well, right now we have $155,676. So we're halfway to meeting our $300,000 goal by the time.
Yeah, now some people who are now listening for the first time may not get that.
Right. We had
the Lennox Foundation came in after we had the first 100,000.
Right.
They said we want 200,000 bucks for our 25,000, right?
Yeah. So we have to get to 300,000.
Yeah.
Is
what we're we're halfway there. We had a ton of people over the weekend.
Yeah, we did. It was great.
Yep.
So what do we do? How do we do it?
We love you. That's what we say. We love you because we do. And you've just got to WAMC.org, click on the lockbox, and you're there.
Yep. Or you can call 1-800-323-9262, and you can ask to speak to Gretchen at extension 145.
Excellent. And
anyone will help you.
Get a mug?
Oh, yeah.
Or what about the mug?
A lot of people are getting the
125
mug.
Bucks?
Yep.
And is your name on the mug?
I don't have one yet, no.
No, I don't mean your name. I mean the person who calls.
You can put whatever name you want on that
mug. So your name is Betty. And you want a Betty mug.
I always wanted to be a Betty.
Well, now you can be. You can have a mug with Betty on it.
If your name is Veronica, you could have it on there, too.
Your nickname, your alias, whatever
Archie,
you like.
Jughead, the whole gag. Yeah. Megan, thank you very much. That's all good news.
Thank you, and thanks to all those people who are pledging.
Well, thank you. WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and just click on the lockbox and go from there. Or, again, you can also call extension 145 at the number you know by heart, 800-323-9262. Go to extension 145 and, or as Alan mentioned, just press zero and we will certainly take care of you. All right, in our final moments, let's do the lightning round and get to as many topics as we possibly can get to in this short period of time. I always love these stories whenever we're at the end of a presidency, and that has to do with legacy. I love legacy stories because I just think they're kind of silly. But Democrats have reversed the partisan imbalance on the federal appeals court that long favored conservatives, a little notice shift with far-reaching consequences for the law and President Obama's legacy. Alan Chartok.
Aye, but here's the rub. There's still the Supreme Court sitting on top of all of them, and that is a conservative, nay, reactionary group of people.
Yeah. That is the rub, and supposedly the appellate bench provides future people for the Supreme Court, but you have to have openings, you have to have the right president.
And they got the young guys there.
They have very young guys, mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I really do, because it's going to set the course of judicial decisions for quite some time, and there are plenty of decisions that don't make it to the Supreme Court
true.
That get decided on the appellate division, and all of the same-sex marriage decisions that have been on the appellate division, the Supreme Court is going to hear one. I think they're going to hear Utah. It's going to make it much more difficult for them not to just say, enough already, it's the law of the land.
I don't know that it'll stop them, but from your mouth
to God's
ears.
Right.
Issue number two. A few months ago, the Democratic path to Senate majority looked long and arduous. It has started to look easier. This New York Times article says the Democrats started the campaign with a clear advantage in enough races to end up with 45 seats, well short of the 50 needed to retain control of the chamber. To get to 50, the party was going to have to run the table in five battleground states. Or replace one of them by holding either Arkansas or Louisiana. But today, the Democratic path to victory looks as clear as it has at any point this year.
Which ain't clear.
And that path remains narrow, to be sure.
And now it isn't Nate Silver anymore, right?
No.
It's the new guy.
It's the new Nate.
Nate Silver was remarkable in his ability to predict. I'm not comfortable here. Personally, I'm not comfortable.
I think it's still way, way up in the air.
It's too early.
Yeah, it's still September. It's still
September. You know, let's revisit this mid-October, mid to late October, and see where we're at. Because nobody's paying attention. You know, I mean, we just went through a round of primaries here in Albany. And nobody pays attention until the weekend before.
That's right.
And so that's the same thing here. You got to work hard. You got to keep making sure that you build your base and identify your voters. But it's still a little too early.
Well, you're the pro.
Yeah, it's too early to tell.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the picture they use of Nate Cohen on the makes him look like he's 19 12. Years old. Right?
No, exactly. 12, really. He looks like he's 12. I mean, really, you know.
Yeah,
but two nice Jewish boys running the numbers.
There you go. all right. Next issue. Let me move on. Here we go. This is fewer New Yorkers getting the benefit of being hired and fired at a young age. A new report shows that employment is down sharply among city residents between 16 and 24, leaving them without basic job skills or the experience that comes from making teenage blunders.
Well, this is also a worldwide phenomenon. Young people are having a hard time getting jobs.
Mm-hmm. And so are old people.
Yes, but coming out of the recession, the Great Recession, there are a lot of people who did not have an opportunity to get jobs. Life is sort of passing them by, and they're living with their parents.
Right. I mean, I think you'll probably see this come in on the campaign trail for governor. De Blasio will push the governor, and we might see Andrew actually take this up and say, I'm going to put some money to this, to programs and stuff like that, if you elect me.
How come De Blasio has a last name and Andrew, we use Andrew's first name here?
To differentiate from his father, with whom I'm always confusing him.
I guess.
I would like to, along with jobs for young people, see a break on loans for education.
Oh, absolutely.
We're sending people out into the world with not a good chance for a job and huge debt.
When I took out a student loan, I was able to pay it back, $50 a month, and it was done because it was like 2%.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I mean, our son has $40,000. Thankfully, it's just about the $40,000, but still, it takes forever.
Yeah,
to
and
pay
it's high interest, and you can't get out of it by declaring bankruptcy. Yeah,
It's really, you know,
not designed for young people.
No, it's not.
We got a couple letters, and then if we have time after that, we'll go to one more topic.
Okay, Jeannie says, yes, California was taken from the indigenous people. The entire U.S. was, for that matter. Mm-hmm. However, California is not filled to the brim with Native Americans. Scotland is filled with Scots. Ethnic hatred and bigotry are always bad. Individuality and self-determination are good things. If it can happen with ballots and not bullets, who are we to say it's bad, says Jeannie. And what? Is there something else here? Corey, I hope the Scots vote on Wednesday stays true to the sentiment in the country at the moment, and that the voters do not get cold feet. The Scots have a chance to show the world what progressives used to believe in. Small is beautiful. What else you got there, Joe?
Anything? That's all I've got. So let them eat steak. The Clintons went to Iowa this weekend. It was her first trip to Iowa since running for a president. Of course, all the speculation was, well, maybe she'll announce. Both on the stage, President Bill Clinton, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and she did a little teasing. She said she's thinking about it, and meanwhile, let's eat steak. President Clinton seemed very happy to be there and was trying to share the spotlight, which is often difficult, I think. And so there was a lot of articles about that. What do you make of it in our 3 minutes left?
She was terrific. I mean, anybody listening to NPR this morning said, wow, you know, I interviewed Hillary on a couple of occasions when she was senator. And she was funny and could take you and wind you around her finger and throw you away. That's how good she was. That's how she sounded here, loose as a goose.
Very, very. I would like to start a pool on when she will announce, because she sure as heck is running.
After the baby.
Yeah. I think she's got to have that baby
with the baby
around.
In her arms.
Yeah.
But I want to know if Bill ate steak, because he's a vegan now, so he must have been.
Well, he had that heart operation.
Yes, he must have been dying. Because I know.
What
does
that party cost to feed steak to, 10,000 people?
Well,
were there?
It's Iowa, right?
Harkin's thing.
Tom Harkin's thing.
They raised them there. Yeah. They raised them cattle there in Iowa.
And potatoes.
And the potatoes.
No, that's Idaho.
It was meat and potatoes. Corn. Maybe it was corn.
No, that's Idaho.
One of those I states.
Right.
All right. Let's take a break. Let's wrap up for this morning. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. A reminder, you can also help us out with the lockbox. We do need the help. You heard the urgent plea, and we need you. WAMC.org,
really
WAMC.org, and go to the lockbox and help out. And we so appreciate it. Alan, Libby, Rosemary, thank you very much
thank
for being
you.
With us this morning. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.